Amen. Where would we be without God's grace? We'd be in a mess. Thank you for that song. That was beautiful. And thank God for his grace. Amen. We're in James chapter number 5. I think I was like, man, we're getting through this part of the service early. I think it's because I gave Pastor all those scriptures to read. And he knew, man, I better give him a lot of time tonight. I mentioned that I was going to finish the book of James. I think it was Wednesday or last Sunday, I said I was going to finish up the book of James tonight. And so as you can tell, we've got about 14 verses to get the book of James done, and I plan to do it tonight. And so I believe that's why we got in at the time we did. But no, it's not going to be long tonight. I want to conclude the study in the book of James. And I want to read a couple of things because I want to be intentional about some things that I say. I personally believe in James chapter number 5 and verse number 7. I honestly was going to preach a couple more weeks, but my goal when I started out was to finish by Mother's Day. Pastor always preaches on the home from Mother's Day to Father's Day every year. He's done that for years, and I knew that, and I intended to get done by Mother's Day. We had a couple missionaries and different things, and so it kind of got me a little bit off track, and we probably could preach 3 or 4 weeks out of these sections right here, but honestly, as I began to look at it, I do believe that James is concluding his thought here in verse number 7. Now, some people believe that it's not till later in this letter, near the very end, where James is kind of given a conclusion, because he doesn't give a conclusion to his letter the way that Paul does. Many of Paul's letters that you're familiar with, there'll be kind of a ending where it's very clear that Paul is kind of signing off. And I think that verse number 7, in my personal opinion, is where James is beginning to sign off on this letter in the book of James. I want to show you why I believe that. And I want to give you a couple thoughts that I believe that James is given to these people that I also believe apply to our lives. And so, you know, it's almost as if James is going back and finishing where he started at. You know, sometimes a preacher will do that. When he presents his message at the very beginning, he comes out with an introduction and he kind of introduces the thought that he's going to be preaching on. And then he kind of gives the sermon, and at the end, he kind of tries to bring it all together with a conclusion that kind of connects the introduction. And I kind of believe that's what James is here doing in his letter. I think he's kind of ending where he started at. He's gonna talk about some topics that he's already talked about. Look at verse number 7, and as Pastor was reading along, I hope you noticed this. There's a word that comes up numerous times in these first couple verses. And the word is patient. Look at verse 7. Be patient, therefore, right? And he goes on, and at the end of it, he talks about, and hath long patience for it in verse number 7. Verse 8, be ye also patient. Verse number 10, he says, take my brethren the prophets who have spoken the name of the Lord as an example of suffering, affliction, and here it is, patience. He said, behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard the patience of Job. And so it's obvious here that James is talking about patience. You see that, right? But not only does James talk about patience, he talks about prayer. Look at verse number 13. He says, is any among you afflicted? Let him pray. Right? Is any sick in verse 14? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him. Verse 15, the prayer of faith shall save the sick. He goes on in verse number 16, says, pray one for another, that ye may be healed. The effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And so James is talking about patience. James is talking about prayer. If we go back in chapter number 1, you'll remember that's the way this letter starts. Chapter number 1, look at verse number 2. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that you may be entire, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. And then verse number 5, he starts talking about prayer. He says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, right? He says, pray, ask of God, which giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea that is driven with the wind and tossed. Let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. And so James is talking about, and then in verse number 12, he actually mentions patience again, or he talks about endurance, which is something that we also mentioned here in chapter 5. Blessed is the man that endureth, right? So James talks about patience. He talks about prayer. I'm going to give you my 3 points at the beginning of my message. So I'm going to try to practice what I believe James was practicing. So this is what I'm going to preach on tonight. Number one, I want to talk about let me make sure I look at it so I say it rightly. And enduring patiently, right? Enduring patiently. And then I want to talk to you about effective praying. And then last, I want to look at this, engaging personally. I believe that's what James says in verse number 19 and 20 of chapter number 5. And so I believe that James is picking up where he left off at in chapter number 1. I even think verse number 19 and 20 could allude back to chapter number 1. Look at what James says. He says, brethren, verse 19, if any of you do err from the truth and one convert him, let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. If you go back to chapter number 1, look at what it says in verse number 13. Let no man say when he is tempted, I'm tempted of God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. Verse 16, do not err, my beloved brethren. You see the similarities here? I believe James is kind of going back to what he started with. And if you'll recall, I know it's been months since we started in the book of James, but if you'll recall in the book of James, what happened is James is writing to a group of believers that we've said numerous times, they're saved, right? He calls them brethren over and over and over again. And they're scattered. He's talking about those 12 tribes. He's talking about a group of saved people that have been scattered by persecution. And if you'll recall the very first message that I preached in James, I said not only were they saved and were they scattered, but these people were struggling. These people had been driven from their homes. They were being persecuted. They were being taken advantage of, as we looked at last week in chapter number 5 when James was talking about those rich men that were oppressing people. I'm not going to go there. We were talking about those rich men and how that they were oppressing people. So these people were struggling, right? They were scattered, they were saved, they were struggling, and James is writing to these people, and he started out talking to those people, and he starts out telling them to be patient. And he tells them to pray. And he talks about in the midst of being patient and praying, he says there's going to be temptations to err from the truth, to be drawn away of your own lust and be enticed. And he says, don't do that. Just because you're going through a difficult time, don't allow that difficulty to become a temptation. Don't allow that trial to become a temptation. I'm kind of recapping chapter number 1 of the book of James because I believe that James kind of goes back and he closes with those same thoughts in chapter number 5. He's telling these people again. He's written this letter and now he's getting ready to close it out. And he says, let me remind you what I said at first. Be patient. Pray. Right? Engage people and personally. Go after people that are erring from the truth. And I want to look at a couple things here that I believe James is saying to us as we look at this letter in chapter number 5. No, the first thing I want us to see is that he says to endure patiently. Right? He says enduring patiently. The word patient and the word endure are very similar words that sometimes translate the same. But I looked up, there's a difference. If you were to get your Strong's Concordance and look in verses 7 down through verse number 11, what you're going to find is that word patient and that word endure are two different words, but sometimes they translate the same. So sometimes the word endure would translate to the word patience. I hope you're with me and I'm not losing you. They're very similar, okay? And they're used many times. Actually, the word that we see here, endure, is used a lot more in the New Testament than the word patience. And so when we think, and many times it's translated as patience. Sometimes it's translated as being long-suffering. So many times when we read the word patient, it's actually talking about this word endurance that James mentions. He mentions them both. I looked up the definition of them. The word patient, sometimes it means this. It means to be, or one version of this word patient, it means to be long-tempered. It's the ability to wait calmly. How many of you struggle with that? Thank you. Oh, there's three honest people in this room tonight. Me, Philip, and Brian, I think it was. Oh, Stacy. Okay. I am impatient. I don't want to get off track here, but I've just found out here recently. I grew my hair out, as some of you know, about 2 months ago, and I'm finding out that I'm too impatient to even fix my hair. I've never fixed my hair my entire life, and so I've never known that struggle. So for those of you that have been fixing hair your entire life, it's a way of building patience. God has been helping you. You say, and some of you looking at me right now saying, "Brother David, you ain't getting very good at it either." I know, I'm struggling with it, right? And I get impatient, and sometimes I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to cut it all off, right? I struggle with patience, and patience it's the ability to wait calmly. It's being long-tempered. It has to do with how we respond to external circumstances, such as people and things that we cannot control. That's patience. But this other word that we see, endurance, it has to do with, that word means to bear up under a heavy load without giving up. It's more of an internal strength or perseverance under trials and suffering. So they're very similar words, but one has to do with the way that we deal with external things, people and circumstances that are out of our control, how we handle those things, if we can be calm and slow to lose our temper, right, and to be patient. But this other word, endurance, has to do with an inner strength. It's something that people have that will help them to endure, will help them to persevere, help them to bear the load of life and what they're carrying. And James touches on both here. He tells these people to endure patiently. You see, they're going through a lot of hard things. These people, as I've said, are saved, they're scattered, they're struggling. And James is telling them, endure patiently. And he gives them a couple pointers on how to do that here in verses number 7. And I would say to you tonight that are saved, are you listening? I hope I'm talking to saved people tonight. I believe I am. If you're struggling, and if you're not struggling, you just store this away somewhere, because one day you will be. If you're saved and you're struggling in this Christian life, I've got some advice for you that James gave to these people that I think applies to us, and that is we need to endure patiently. We need to learn what it is to wait calmly, to carry the load, to persevere, because life's not easy. Now, it's harder for some than it is for others. I mean, you got to understand, the people that James was writing to were being persecuted. These people were being oppressed. And maybe you feel like you are. Maybe you feel like you're being persecuted. Maybe you feel like you're being oppressed. Maybe you're just struggling with some things in life. It's a part of life. Life is sometimes a struggle. And for those that are struggling, James says, hey, just endure patiently. He says, it's going to be okay, and I want to encourage you tonight, brethren, as Christians. I want to remind you, as I need to be reminded, that that's something that we as Christians need to learn to do, and that is to endure patiently. I'm going to give you three things that I believe James says that will help us to endure patiently. Number one, I think James says to us, he says, hey, you need to be confident. You need to be confident. Look at verse number 7. He says, be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it, until he receive the early and latter rain. Verse 18, be ye also patient. Establish your hearts, right? Look at verse number 8. He says, establish your hearts. That word establish, I looked it up, it means to set fast. It means to resolutely confirm our hearts. He says, get your heart set fast. Right? Be confident that God is going to make things right. That's what James is saying to these people. These people that are struggling, these people that are going through a hardship, James is saying, hey, I want you to understand there's something that you can be confident in. Jesus is going to make it right. And if you're struggling tonight, and I don't know who I'm speaking to, and I don't know what you're going through, but if you're a child of God, if you're saved and you're struggling, I've got some good news for you. You can be confident that one day Jesus is going to make it right. He gives us some examples of this here in this story, in this account right here. He gives us the example of this farmer in verse number 7. He says, "Behold, the husbandman," that's the farmer, "waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth and hath long patience for it." And that farmer, he waits because he's confident that it's going to come. And I could go into the study of the early and the latter rain. They say the early rains came in October, November. The latter rains came in the spring months. And this farmer, he just had to wait. He just had to be confident that God was going to send the rain. Other times of year in this part of the world that they were living in, it was very dry during the other seasons of the year. But that farmer, he just had to be confident God is going to send the rain. He always does. And so we as Christians, we just need to be confident when we're going through a struggle. We need to be confident that God's going to fix it. God's going to do what he says he's going to do. He's going to come through like he said he would come through. We got to be confident. You know, confidence comes from trust. I mentioned that farmer. You know why that farmer is confident that it's going to rain? Because he trusts God. You know why he trusts God? Because he's tried God. Romans chapter number 5 says this, verse 3 and 4 says, "We glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope." See, these people were going through tribulations. They were going through troubles. They were going through struggles, but those struggles were teaching them to be patient, and patience was giving them experience, and experience was giving them hope, just like that farmer that had struggled. He had worked that field, and he had planted that crop, but there was just something that was out of his control, and that was rain. But because he had been there before, because he had trusted God, because he experienced God, because he'd seen God send the rain, he was confident that he would do it again. And see, so sometimes the struggles that we go through, the trials that we face, they're to make us patient. They're to make us learn to trust God and to go through these experiences of life. There was a verse in that song this morning that they sing. I think it was the second verse. I will not try to quote it. Every time I try to quote a song, it gets sideways. Everybody starts laughing and snickering, and I'm like, I said that wrong. But that song they sang this morning, y'all remember that song? I don't even know what it's called. "He's been so good to me." Nah. See, there it goes. What's it called? Thank you. I got it right. He's been so good. God's been so good. The second verse of that song was talking about how that if he didn't do anything else, and I'm paraphrasing, if he didn't do anything else, I know enough already to know that I can trust him. That's where this farmer is. He's learned that he can trust God. I believe that's where those prophets were. I believe that's where Job was. Remember Job? He gives the example of Job. Look at verse number 11. He says, "Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord." He talks about Job. You know what Job said? He said, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." Why, Job? Because I know. Because I know. I know whom I have believed. I know my Redeemer, right? Job said, "I know who God is, and I'm going to trust God." Now, we all know that there was some times in Job's life where he got a little shaky. But can I tell you, through it all, Job trusted God. Job was confident that God was going to do. His wife said, "Job, curse God and die." And Job said, "What are you talking about? Woman, you're crazy." He said, "I'm not going to curse God." He said, "Blessed be the name of God," right? "Blessed be the name of the Lord." He said, "The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." How could Job say that? Because Job was confident. He was confident. He knew God was going to do what he said he was going to do. And so we need to be confident. Job was confident. I believe those prophets who spoke the name of the Lord that were persecuted for speaking for God, they were confident. That's why they spoke for him. That farmer, he was confident. And so he says, you need to endure patiently. And how are you going to do that? Number one, you need to be confident. Number two, he says, you need to be content. Look at verse number 9. He says, "Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door." That word grudge, it means to grumble or to moan or to bicker. And he says, don't bicker amongst one another. You know, sometimes difficulties will cause that. It'll cause people to fuss and fight. These people were going through difficulties. These people were struggling. They were scattered. They were being oppressed by those rich men that we read about in chapter number 5. And they were just, you know, their lives were not what they once had been, and they were going through a difficulty because they had trusted Christ. And if you're not careful when you're struggling, you know what'll start happening? You'll start bickering. You'll start complaining. You'll start finger pointing. You're going through a hard time. You're struggling. And if you're not careful, you know what you'll do? You'll want to turn that struggle on somebody else. I'm not alone on this, am I? Some of you know what I'm talking about. Some of you young people know what I'm talking about. Dad comes home. Within the first sentence, you know he's having a hard day. He's struggling. Right? Dad, you come in. It's Mother's Day. Let's get the mothers in there. You come in. You know, you thinking, I got great plans this evening. You come in, you say something to your wife, and immediately, she don't even got to say nothing. She just looks at you, and you know she's struggling. She's had a hard day, right? You know what you got to guard against in those times? Bickering, arguing, grudging. And I think that's what James is talking about. I really do. I believe James, it almost doesn't even fit in the context. You say, why does James say this? I think James is saying, listen, I know you're going through a hard time. I know you're struggling. I know you're being persecuted. I know you're being oppressed. But I'm just telling you, you just need to be patient. You need to be confident. God is going to come through. The Lord standeth at the door. The judge of all the earth is going to pass judgment. Don't start fighting with one another. Don't start bickering. Don't start complaining. Evidently, this was an issue. Look at chapter 4, remember? Verse 11, speak not evil one of another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judgeth his brother speaketh evil of the law and judgeth the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. We talked about that. Who do we think we are? Speaking evil of one another. But if we're not careful, that's what trials will make us do. We'll feel the pressure, right? That word endure, I told you, it means to be able to bear up underneath the pressure, to be able to persevere through the trial. But if we're not careful, when that trial comes, when that load is on us and it's heavy, if we're not careful, you know what we'll do? We'll start to lash out at everybody else. And James says, don't do that. Be content. Be confident. Be content. He goes on in verse number 12. I believe he goes on and says, be consistent. Look at verse 12. He says, but above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay, nay, lest you fall into condemnation. I believe James is saying, don't say things that you don't mean. He says, let your yea be yea. And let your nay be nay. When you're struggling, when you're going through a hard time, he's telling these Christians, endure patiently. Be confident that God's going to come through. Be content. Don't be bickering and getting angry at everybody else. Just kind of calmly. That could be another word I believe you could throw in there. Be calm, right? Just be calm, be content, and just trust God. And he says, and be consistent. Let your yea be yea and your nay, nay. Don't get into saying things that you don't mean, because that's what struggles will make you do. That's what trials will make us do. It'll make us say things that we don't even mean or that we don't even believe. And James says, no, don't do that. Let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. You need to endure patiently. So number one, he says endure patiently. I told you he gave those examples of the prophets and of Job. I believe the prophets and Job could qualify for every one of these. They were confident. I believe they were content. Now, I told you Job had some hiccups along the way, but overall, Job was pretty much like, hey, God's in control. I'm just going to trust God. They were confident. They were content. They were consistent. And God says for us to be that way, to endure patiently. Number two, so he says, number one, we need to be enduring patiently. Number two, he says a word about effective praying. Look at verse number 13. He says, is any among you afflicted? Let him pray. Is any merry? Let him sing psalms.
Is any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up. And if he have committed sins, they shall be forgiven him. Confess your faults one to another and pray one for another that ye may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. James says you need to endure patiently, but you need to have some effective praying or effectual praying. He gives us the priority of it. He says, is anybody afflicted? Is anybody sick? Is anybody in sin? He says, you need to pray. You need to pray. Prayer is a priority. You know, I think we're missing it in our lives. I can't speak for you, but I know for me. I think sometimes prayer is, it may be the missing piece. We need to pray. James is closing out this letter to this people, and he's saying, hey, be patient. Be patient. I know you're struggling. I know you're going through a hard time. I know those rich people are oppressing you. I know that you're being persecuted for your faith. I know all these things are happening, he says, but just be patient. And he says, hey, and don't forget, pray. Pray. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Can I tell you, prayer is a priority. We've got to pray. God, help us to learn what it is to pray. He says there's a priority of prayer. He says there's a power to prayer. Look at verse number 16, the end of it. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man, look at it, availeth much. It gets the job done. That's what availeth much means. It gets the job done. Prayer is what gets the job done. As Marcus was singing that song this morning, from where I was sitting, I don't know from where you were sitting, but from where I was sitting, I could see the tears streaming down his face. And I was thinking, with all that they've been through with Ellie, Marcus knows God's come through. I can trust him. But can I tell you, it's the power of prayer. Now, thank God for doctors, some of them. Amen. Thank God for people that can operate and people that can do those types of things. But can I tell you, the only thing they can do is what God allows them to do. It's prayer. Prayer is where the power's at. Prayer is what changes things. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. It's got power. It makes a difference. It changes things. And he gives us some proof. So he gives us the priority of prayer. If there's anyone sick, if there's anyone afflicted, if there's people that are in sin, he says you need to pray, pray, pray. And he says there's power in prayer. It availeth much. And then he says, let me give you some proof. Look at verse 17. He says, Elias, talking about Elijah, was a man subject to like passions as we are. And he prayed earnestly that it might not rain. And it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. He said, let me give you an example of the proof of the power of prayer. He said, Elijah, a man just like you, a man of like passions as we are, just a normal man. See, we look at Elijah and we think, oh, he's a great prophet. And yes, he was. But James says he was just a normal person. He was a man of like passions as we are. And he prayed, and God closed up the heavens, and he prayed again, and God sent the rain. Do you believe God can do that? If I'm honest with you, I sometimes pray, God, help my unbelief. Because I want to believe that, and I do believe that. But I want to see it. And I have seen it. I've seen God answer some prayers, and so have you. But I believe we can see God answer some more prayers. There's power in prayer. I remember the story. I think, is it John Earl Rice? I can't remember. That used to pray in his meetings for women that were without child. Have you ever heard of that? I think it was John R. Rice. I just read it here recently. It might not have been John R. Rice. I think it was. It could have been another preacher. But he would pray for these women all the time. It was just a burden of his, women that wanted to have children that couldn't have children. And he always, any meeting, evangelistic campaign, he went and preached. People knew that John R. Rice, I think it was John R. Rice, wanted to pray that they would have children. And he said that people would come to him. And, I mean, he would pray for them that God would open their womb and God would allow them to be with child. And there was prayer after prayer after prayer that was answered, and there was just testimonies of people that said that God answered that prayer, and they had a child. They've been trying for years and couldn't have a child, and they prayed, and God gave them a child. And one night, they said later in his years, I believe it was him, I'll look it up and I'll confirm it some other time, right? Later in his years, he got up an evangelistic meeting, and he said he wanted all the husbands and wives or something to stand to their feet, and all of a sudden he started praying, and he said, "God, please, God, would you open the wombs of these dear people?" And all the men sat down real fast. Right? If your prayer is that powerful, that's what I'm talking about. They say, "Oh, I don't want John R. Rice praying for me to have no kids," right? I mean, this man had prayer that people could trust in. God, give us that kind of faith. God, give us that kind of power. Where we could pray and God would do things that are just supernatural. Things that would just that would just shake the community. Things that would open people's eyes. Things that would make people see that God is God. And James is telling these people that are struggling, he's saying, "Hey, be patient. Endure patiently." He says there needs to be effective praying. And then last, and this is my last point, and I'll be done. He says, engage personally. He says, brethren, I know I'm skipping a lot of stuff here, which I'm kind of glad. Some of this is some hard scripture, right? Look at verse number 19. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth and one convert him, let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. James says, don't forget to help people. If you see someone that's erring, reach out. Engage them. Now, I'm going to bring this to a close, and I want you to kind of try to understand what I'm saying. These people are struggling. They're going through some great trials. We looked at that in chapter number 1. The trials and the temptations. The whole chapter 1 just about is about trials and temptations. The very first 15 verses about trials and temptations. And these people are going through trials and temptations. And James says, in the midst of these trials and temptations, one could err from the truth. Now, there's a lot of people who believe a lot of different things about this, and I'm not going to get into a debate about it. I think there's strong arguments for both, but honestly, I believe James is talking about Christians. Look at verse number 19. Brethren. Brethren. If any of you, brethren, do err from the truth and one convert him. You say, well, how does brethren get converted? Peter did. You remember that, right? Jesus told Peter, "Peter, I've prayed for you. And when thou art converted..." Peter, when you get right again, after you deny me, after you stop following me, after you go fishing again, Peter, when thou art converted, when you get right back again, he says, "I've got a work for you to do. I want you to strengthen the brethren." And so these people are struggling, and James is saying, hey, in the midst of this struggle, there may be some among you that begin to err from the truth. They begin to be drawn away of their own lust and enticed, and sin, when it's finished, bringeth forth death, and they're on their way to destruction. And James says, hey, don't forget about them. If you see a brother that's erring, if you see a sister that's erring, James says, you engage personally. You get involved. Look at it, verse number 19. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth and one convert him, Let him know that he which converteth the sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. You say, it's none of my business. Yes, it is. If you know somebody tonight that's struggling, a Christian, and even if it's a lost person, I think this could be applied to lost people. I don't think it has to just be a Christian, but I believe in the context, James is saying there's going to be some in this struggle that's going to begin to err, and they're going to begin to get off track, and he says, hey, you go get them. You go turn them back, convert them, turn them. That's what that word convert means. It means to turn them back on the right path, to get them back on the right track. And if we know somebody tonight that's began to err from the truth, I want to say, as James said, let's get after them personally. Let's engage personally. Let's go after them and tell them, don't go this way. I know you're struggling. I know you're going through a hard time. I know you're in the trial and there's temptation, but I'm telling you, just be patient, just be confident, just be calm, just be content, just be consistent. God's going to come through. Pray for that person. James is closing this letter, and he's saying to these people, I believe James has given them some great advice, and he's saying to them that they need to endure patiently, they need to pray effectively, and they need to engage personally. And can I say to you tonight, I believe that's what we need to do. We just got to bear up underneath the load. Sometimes life's tough, but God's good. He's going to come through. He always has, and he always will. And we need to pray effectually, fervently. It says the fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And we need to engage personally. We need to go after people, whether they're saved people that have erred from the truth or whether they're lost people that don't even know the truth. It's our job as Christians to go get them. And I believe that's what James is saying as he's closing his letter. You can stand to your feet. Heads bowed and eyes closed. I'm going to ask the pianist to come to the piano.